Hello and welcome to the Bristol City Vixen Cast. This is a podcast all about Bristol City women. I'm Nat Brown.
And I am DM Withers. Hello, hello.
Hello. I'd love to be able to say that we were bringing you another fantastic interview with a Bristol City legend, but instead we have match reports from WS.
That's right. We obviously missed the last match review after Leicester. I think we were so
taken aback
and confused, really, because it was just such a strange match. And maybe we'll come on to that. And well, we definitely will be coming on to that. We hummed and ahed about whether or not it was a good idea to dissect Sunday's 7-3 loss to Brighton and Hove Albion. But we've decided that we are going to do that. And we're going to do that in conjunction with discussing the 5-2 loss against Leicester. Don't know if it's going to be a long podcast, but we'll see. But I'm going to start by asking Nat, what happened?
I have absolutely no idea. It's completely baffling. It's just so weird. It's so weird. Yeah, we've conceded an absolute ton of goals. Mind you, we've scored quite a few as well. Should have, you know, won the games based on how much we scored. I don't know. Headless chooks, as Tanya Oxtoby would say. I think it's I don't know, it's a little bit frightening actually.
It is a bit concerning. Well, it's very concerning actually, from the perspective of watching what's happening in the stands. The Leicester game, we were definitely under the cosh from the get-go, weren't we?
Yeah, the whole time really. They just kind of immediately were right at us. That's kind of how they play, isn't it? They get right into people and they just attack. And they had that weird game, didn't they, where they kind of looked like they were cruising against someone and then like conceded a load of goals. So I think they play in a really open way in which they want to like score a lot of goals. They'll probably concede quite a lot of goals, but they just looked absolutely all over us. They looked like they could have scored 100 times. At Leicester, it just kind of kept coming. It was pretty bad.
And it was really I think in terms of the formation of how Leicester set up, for me it was like unlike any other football game I've ever seen. It was so bizarre. It was, I think you described it quite beautifully, as it was a bit like the 1920s, which
that's what it looked. I mean, I wasn't alive in the 1920s, but I've read a few books about old football, and it did look like an inverted pyramid where you have six up front. I was just like, I've seen drawings of this in football books where you just like, they just put everybody up front, and then and then the keeper might die. That's the sort of game it was, you know, where they just kind of get beaten to death by. It was just, yeah, just it looked so weird and old fashioned. If you'd have put like a sepia lens on things, you wouldn't have believed you were in like 2024. It was so bizarre. But it worked for them, didn't it? They put loads of people up front and they just scored a load of goals and we didn't know how to deal with it.
Yeah, we seemed to have one tactic, which was, I think we had anticipated that they would kind of do that. And our one tactic was trying to get it over that inverted pyramid. And I think the two times that we did do that, we actually did score. But for the rest of the time, the 5-foot-tall Mamiki Yuka was somehow or other managed to cut out that lobbed ball over the top of their six up front or midfield kind of wall of power. It was absurd. It was an absurd game of football, I thought.
It was, because we scored first, didn't we? So we're totally kind of getting battered, really. And then we go and score with this ridiculous Fionn Morgan goal. And then, honestly, I've blanked out what happened after that. It was just weird, disappointing, bizarre, not football. It was just weird. And then, you know, yeah.
It was. I mean, it's very attacking, beautiful attacking football from Leicester at times. Most of the time, because they scored 4-5 goals. What essentially happened after that is we held on until a few minutes before half time, and then we scored, and then they scored, and then they scored again. It's quite a long time ago now. I can't quite remember what what happened, but you know, Che Yanez made loads of saves, and then we came out in the second half, and you know, another brilliant goal from Testrup, beautiful finish. But just this chasing of the game thing, this dynamic, it is really, it's really not good.
Going
behind and chasing.
I mean, that's the weird thing, isn't it? Like, so away from home, we're actually pretty good at scoring goals. Like, we scored, you know, a couple of goals that we kind of, you know, the team made them happen. They weren't like flukes. I mean, the first one was like came out of nowhere, but you know, they still did it through the press and everything. It was just, yeah, to just concede that many goals when actually one feature of this season so far has maybe been like, maybe not winning or getting things out of games, but it's always been like a very reasonable scoreline. Apart from the Man City game, they've all sounded like really reasonable, haven't they? Like, we haven't conceded a ton of goals. You know, it's been like 2-1, you know, some draws. You know, I'm thinking like Arsenal 2-1, like Chelsea, what was it,
3-0,
which, you know, against a Chelsea side that had everybody that was playing, like, that wasn't a bad result. So I think it was just, it was probably the first game where we were like, oh, like, they properly beat us.
Yeah.
That is like putting five past us is really, like, really horrible. So,
and also a team that was not too far away from us in the table. Okay, we are very much cemented to the bottom of the WSL at the moment, and I think that is where we're gonna stay until we're dumped out of the league, you know, ceremoniously, or dumped out of the league proper in May. You know, for now, I mean, any hope that was there for the WSL survival is just, I think it pretty much evaporated entirely at Leicester, and then completely and utterly destroyed on Sunday against Brighton and Hove Albion. But yeah, just a really, just a very disappointing match, actually, but confusing. I think we were all a bit confused about what had happened. As I say, it was absurd. The whole setup was absurd, and yeah, disappointing match. But lovely, lovely day out in Leicester, and nice warm welcome from the Pride Foxes group, and that was really nice to see. They've got some beautiful Pride memorabilia in the Leicester club shop, so that's something that we'd really like to have at Bristol City one day as a symbolic gesture of inclusion towards LGBTQ plus supporters. And they had the lovely trans and Pride Progress tassels as well, so that was really nice. Who knows if we'll get that one day.
Yeah, that, I mean, that
these
was
things matter more to me. I like football scarves, but
you like football scarves, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so yeah, that it was a nice day out, but then yeah, just it was a bit of a weird one.
And a really good away following as well. Excellent away following. Lots of people coming in who were dropping in from different parts of the country, as well as a, you know, fairly full away coach, and that was nice. Probably deserved more than that. So yeah, but a shame. So then we had another break
in the WSL season. Do we do anything other than have breaks?
It's so boring, and I just actually really, I don't like it. I don't like this 12 team league thing.
No.
I don't like these endless interruptions. It's really, see, it's kind of nice to have a rest from losing all the time, and there's moments of recovery and from that, but
you forget about it, don't you, in 2 weeks, I guess, at least.
You more or less forget about it. I mean, it's Tuesday now, and I've kind of
just about let go.
I don't know.
Well,
we're
recording this, it's going to bring it all back up.
Yeah, I mean, I can barely remember. So Sunday, 7-3 against Brighton. And I really thought we could get something from that game. I mean, well, we obviously had to. It was obviously a must-win game.
They don't even have a coach,
don't they?
Well, they don't have like a manager, do they?
Oh, a coach. I thought you meant a coach.
You thought you meant they all drove up.
Yeah, they all drove up. They carpooled.
they could. I'm sure. I've driven further for a football game to play it and then lose. Anyway, they played it and won. Fair play to them. But they were the closest in the table, weren't they? Absolutely. Trying to think of a word.
Wow, but, just, I mean,
yeah. I won't do adjectives today. I won't do adjectives today. Anyway,
so let's just give you the facts of the goals. So, Elizabeth Turland, who I'm just trying to remember the goals. So like there was a from the corner, wasn't it? So the other thing to mention, I suppose, is Liv Clark starting.
Yep.
Shea Yanez on the bench. Mm-hmm. And I did, you know, another kind of weird situation with the goalkeeping setup. See, Liv Clark started for Wales,
yep.
Got a fantastic clean sheet against Ireland. I don't know if that was informing the thinking there, but Liv started. You know, she is a big fan favourite, isn't she, Liv?
Yeah, definitely.
So that's always going to be a popular decision. But she conceded, well, the team conceded from a stupid corner, stupid goal, and Paulina Bremer then scored another goal, which I think was it from the edge of the box? I can't even remember. Yeah, I haven't watched back the...
But it was 4 minutes later, wasn't
it? It was 4 minutes later.
So that was the disappointment, that we were like, it was 0-0, and then it was 2-0.
And we weren't playing badly, but we played reasonably well for the first 10 minutes. And I thought, oh, come on, we're going to get something here. And actually, over the course of that match, just a whole universe unfolded, didn't it? It had so many different plot lines and dynamics were unfolding, you know, interpersonal, geopolitical, and there was a lot going on in that 90 minutes.
Someone should have made like a kind of 2-hour documentary about that game,
that
like,
match in particular, because it was it was an event, wasn't it?
It really was an event.
So 2-0 down, but around the sort of 15 minute mark, I just thought we started doing this stupid playing out from the back thing where we were giving them agency.
Putting ourselves in real danger.
And we did that throughout. Yeah. And I was just like, what are you doing? Why are you doing that?
Yeah. And just the way we were doing it, where it was going as well. It wasn't oh, this is crafty, beat the press. It just was like, it was just going in the wrong places. And it was like setting traps. But then we were the ones falling into the traps. That's exactly the opposite of how you do it. Like, you're meant to set a trap, spring them and go.
Yeah.
You know, then you're meant to pull them in, and then you break out and you've beaten the first line already, and it's a nice way to... But no, we were just like, they were springing us. It was like, it just didn't...
It just completely played into any... We gave it to them on a plate. Like, we have so many times, just gave it to them. And Lazelle was on the bench.
Yeah.
She was just called up to the England under-23s, and then she was training with the England squad. Congratulations to her. I'm sure that will put a few zeros on the price tag, which is going to be nice for the people who are holding the purse strings in the summer when she goes. And you know, good luck to Naomi Lazelle. I can't wait to see her in her full England fettle. She's a fantastic player, and it's a real pleasure watching her. Unfortunately, she wasn't there playing for us in the back line. Maybe if she was there, she does have more composure. She can thread those passes. Maybe it would have been a slightly different storyline, but it wasn't. We just gave them the score. To sound a bit American about it, we gave them the score.
We gave them the score.
Yeah.
It's true. We did give them the ball too many times. And then it wasn't necessarily, even if something didn't directly come out of it, but I'm pretty sure one of their goals did actually just come out of us flapping at the back from a goal kick. But even if it wasn't, it was just like the feeling that it created. It was just like, oh, we look like we don't know how to do this now. I just felt like we just looked a bit confused. Like, what was our outlet? Like, depending on Ella Powell to be your kind of go-to attacker, you know, it's just like, you're going to leave gaping holes. You know, it's just like, what, you know, I don't
she
know.
She was really trying, wasn't she, to be a catalyst.
Yeah,
on,
I think she was. I think she was genuinely Sunday. Like being like, right, okay, if I make some moves, we might get something. But it just kind of, I wasn't really convinced whether or not that was the plan. And if it was, like, was it being like poorly executed, or was she going a bit rogue, or is it great that she went a bit rogue because it's actually the player's responsibility to do stuff? Like, I'm still very confused about how I feel about all of it. Like, I'm not sure. Like, usually when you watch City, it's like, you know what the plan is, and it's like usually like quite well done. And I get the system that they play, when it comes out as like either a very, very, very tight score, like a tight loss, or we get something from it. I kind of understand why we've done it, because it's like we've really been in this a lot of the season without getting off the bottom of the table. We've been in it for quite a long time. But with now, I'm just like the plan's not changed, but we're just, I don't know. I don't know if like, yeah, I think maybe some of the players are kind of like, should I be the one to like, should I be the catalyst? Should I do something different? Should I try and do this? And maybe they're kind of doing something beyond their actual ability, or they're like kind of trying to take responsibility, but in doing that, they've left like some kind of gaping hole, or like they're not taking responsibility and they're not stepping up when they should. So it's kind of like, well, the plan needs people to kind of like have agency, you know, like rather than just be told what to do. I don't know. It's very confusing. It's very confusing. And as just spectators, like we don't have any insight into what's actually being trained, what's being worked on, what's being said. We have no idea if this is like whose fault this is. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like, is this like,
I mean, I looked at it, you know, the Leicester game, like fundamentally the effort that the players put in, it was so clear that they were working their socks off, but the system that had been set up for them was not fit for purpose in that particular match and in that situation, and there was no adjustment within the game to respond to what was happening. It felt like it. That's what it looked like to
me. Yeah. I know what you mean. I can see that a bit more. I think, yeah, like it was, but.
And there was a similar, you know, effort. The effort was there on Sunday. You know, they were really trying. It wasn't like they weren't really playing for the shirt.
No.
But you can see the despondency setting in.
But that was the thing. I'm kind of like, so when I was watching it, I just felt like, is like, yeah, there were a few moments when you kind of felt like, it did feel more like confused.
Yes.
And I think confusion is like the worst thing that can happen in a football team. Like if you've got anyone looking slightly bewildered, that you're never going to win it.
Yeah.
Like if, and so I'm like, we've had kind of, you know, we've had matches in the past when I think like, right, okay, so like whose responsibility is it to do this certain thing, you know? And I'm thinking of times when like in the past when like Abby Harrison's like gone rogue and you're thinking like, what are you doing picking the ball up there? You should be up front, you know? And it's those kind of times when you're like, no, someone's like, you've got to like stick to the plan. And even if you lose, when everybody like looks like they know what to do, it doesn't feel that bad. You're just like, well, fair enough, we just got beaten by a better team, you know. But there was moments certainly on against Brighton when people were just like, what's happening? But then I also think like, you would, wouldn't you, if you were playing in that game?
Yeah, I mean, even we were, if watching I was like, what is happening?
What the hell is happening? It was just so weird. Like,
yeah, it was weird. It was just, again, absurd. The absurdity principle of just losing a game at home 7-3, of scoring three goals at home and then conceding
to
seven.
The team above you in the league. It's just like, it's not, do you know what I mean?
It's like it's a low scoring rugby game. It's completely ridiculous.
So I've come out of this talking to you like absolutely no clearer than I was before. I've not done any processing. I'm just like still completely baffled. I think the only thing to do is kind of just open up my cranium and throw that one in the bin. I just, surely. And this is now the test of how professional our setup is. Have they got people there who can convince this squad psychologically that is done and over, and the next thing looks nothing like it? Because professional athletes can do that in a game. They can do the most stupid, ridiculous thing, and then the next minute do the most amazing thing, and then be, so it's just like, this is now a test. And I'm not saying what they did was like stupid or ridiculous. It was just like, but it was an absurd match to lose. Like
the unraveling of it. And I think
but can they now go, right, okay, we are professional athletes. Next game is totally different. Because I think a lot of it now is psychological. And I just remember Lauren Dykes years ago when she was coaching, when she first started doing coaching, she just used to, like, I just remember being on the sidelines for one game and all she said was, be professional. That was her message. I just remember it really, really, really clearly because we were just on the verge of getting really badly beaten. And that was her message. It was our relegation season, it must have been, actually. Was she there then?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was just like, that was her message, be professional. And it's just like, right, how is that message now? Be professional. Like, don't let that happen again. Don't let that. Like, we've actually not had that bad a season. Don't let this be the defining end to our season, because we really don't deserve this. We've actually been all right. We've been everybody's favourite underdog, and that's nobody's favourite score.
It's
not fair, actually.
But before we come on to that point, I just wanted to talk about the kind of dynamics of the second half, just to paint the picture, relive the back and forth, to and fro nature of it. So beautiful free kick from Megan Connolly.
Oh, that was amazing.
It was a beautiful free kick. I mean, you know, quality footballers. I mean, that's a fantastic free kick. So 2-1, brilliant. And then Tatiana Pinto. The ghosts of Bristol's past came back to haunt us in quite a severe way. So Tatiana Pinto, 64th minute. Can't really remember what her goal was either. I think, no, I can remember. It was across from the right, wasn't it? And a stupid tap-in. Mm. And then Brooke Aspin scored. And at that point, I didn't even notice it. I was just like, oh, we just scored. Because I wasn't even looking. And then then Testrup scored a really good goal, and I was like, "Oh, hang on a minute, we're going to win this 5-4." You know, football fan in me was just like, "Oh, we're going to win this 5-4." You know, imagine if we did win this 5-4 and did turn that around, it would be the greatest game ever. But no, unfortunately, it was followed by goals from Hayley in the 89th minute, and then Vicky Lasada scored a penalty 90+2 after a very soft penalty from Katie Robinson. Did a nice little ballet dive in the penalty box. Anyway, we won't talk about Katie Robinson because
let's just not
talk about her, but that's the Katie Robinson silence. And then Katie Robinson scored in the 90+6 minutes.
Yeah.
To make it 7-3. And that was cruel. And it was shit.
Yeah.
And it was just unbelievable, actually. And like, people were leaving, weren't they? Like, yeah. Shahan left early, Joe left early. If we'd gone down 3-0 in the first half, I was seriously considering leaving. I haven't really left a football match before, but I was just, I just thought, I don't want to see this. We didn't. And then we turned around and we saw Sarah and Em, who haven't been to a football match since before the pandemic. So Em Coward and Sarah Green, who used to do the ticket box volunteering up at Stoke Gifford. That was probably the best thing that happened on Sunday. And it was amazing to see them. It was beautiful to see them. So I was really, really pleased to see them. They're going to be back for the Tottenham game. So that was fantastic.
Later then, it was just like the old days.
yeah, exactly. It was interesting to get their perspective on it. And we should say as well that there was a protest in the, I think around the 80th minute as well, wasn't there?
Yeah, I think it might have been around 80 minutes.
With the Eastern Cowgirls, the team, people connected to the Eastern Cowgirls, protesting against the arms fair, which is held at Ashton Gate on the 5th and 6th of March. So we're recording this on Tuesday the 5th, evening of Tuesday the 5th of March. We also, Bristol City Vixencast, also signed a statement that was written by Stanley from One Stream in Bristol, who was saying, you know, registering our concern and disease with the fact that the arms fair was being held at Ashton Gate. It's not the kind of thing. The name of the conference is called the Future Indirect Fires Conference, and sponsors of the event include Elbit Systems, an Israeli arms company who are a major supplier to the Israeli army and whose drones are being used right now to surveil and target Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. And it was quite a shock, actually, in the lead up to the match that news about the arms fair was happening. It was broken by Tristan Cork at the Bristol Live. We understand that the conference had happened last year. Do you recognise that the military industrial complex has its roots in Bristol? There's a lot of different places in which around Bristol where military industries thrive, but nonetheless it was a surprise, and it felt, you know, quite frankly, felt like a bit of a violation that to find out that this place which we'd been calling our home and enjoying being in that space, that it was hosting an arms fair. It was really disappointing, and yeah, I fully support the protesters. I wasn't part of the banner unfurling, but I applauded them. I was a bit concerned about their well-being when they were being tugged away quite, you know, fairly violently, I would say. With aggressively, maybe not violently, yeah, not by violently.
I still don't quite understand what grounds they were asked to leave on.
It would be interesting to see the policy, wouldn't it, Nat?
I love to see a policy. No matter what decision is made, show me the policy. Yeah. Anyway, if anyone wants to show me the policy, I'd love to see it. I'd actually genuinely really like to see it.
Yeah.
Because that sort of thing is really interesting to me. When anyone's kind of like, when anyone does anything like that, I'm like, just show me. Where does it say it in black and white that this is what you're allowed to do and this is what you're not allowed to do? Because it didn't look to me like a kind of, it didn't look to me like a you have to leave situation.
No.
They just had a banner and were chanting goals, not guns, I think.
They were.
Which is fair enough, but unfortunately, Brighton got three and we didn't get any. So
yeah,
I'm not blaming them.
They manifested those goals. it's not their fault. But yeah, exactly. Yeah, what was the policy? And, you know, as the leaflet that I was reading from, the Bombs Away Bristol leaflet, goals not guns, no arms fair at our football ground, love football, hate arms fairs. I absolutely stand by that. And I know some people, there's a range of opinions on the matter, aren't there? There's people who would feel ambivalent, like in everything that happens in the world, people feel ambivalent. Oh, it's nothing to do with me. I don't care, really. Don't have any feelings. And that's really valid. There's people who are really kind of pro arms fairs and or like anti-woke, so to speak, and are proud of that. But for me, it's really important that people are able to protest. Mm-hmm. It's really important to me that we live in a democracy where people can do that. And I think it's important. And I personally, speaking as an individual, I hope that there will be a process of dialogue and deliberation with the football club among people who have those channels to do so that arms fairs will not be held at Ashton Gate in the future.
Yeah, it's not really appropriate, is it? That's all it is, really. You know, to use school language, it's not appropriate. And a 5-year-old could probably tell you that. So maybe I'll find one and take them to the club. Anyway.
So that was happening as well.
It was quite dramatic, wasn't it?
It was quite dramatic. And, you know, I know what I just said was a bit dramatic, but, you know.
Anyway, hopefully the rest of the season won't be like that.
No. And hopefully there won't be, you know, arms fairs, protesters. Hopefully there won't be 7-3 losses at home. But, well, that was the question that was coming round to actually to close the podcast, or our final thing to think about is have the wheels come off the bus? And how do you feel about the fact that we've essentially been relegated in early March and we've got until, is it the 18th of May before the end of the season?
Yeah, we've got a long old slog yet before this is over.
And we've got to face
Chelsea.
Man United away.
Yep. Arsenal
Spurs,
away.
Spurs at home.
Yep. You're doing it chronologically. That's a good idea.
Arsenal away.
Yeah. Chelsea away.
That's the last game of the season.
Yeah.
We've got Chelsea away, Everton at home.
Yeah. What was it? Five
Liverpool.
Games. Liverpool. Yeah.
Liverpool at home. There's no easy games in the WSL.
Well, no. Unless we could play that that old West Ham team again.
Every single week.
That would be brilliant.
That would be great at Dagenham. And just
West
have
Ham,
that.
When they were rubbish.
Before they had Katrina Gorry and...
Yeah. All their amazing players stepped up. Yeah. Have the wheels come off the bus. Look, I'm an eternal optimist, as you can hear from my tone of voice. I always believe. I actually... we will, I believe we are to get relegated. However, I don't think this is necessarily like a sign of things to come. Like maybe everyone's going to be playing now for pride. Maybe that was like so damaging that the only way is up. That is possible. That is possible. If you had Rachel Furness telling you off after that game, you'd probably go, I never want that to happen again. I don't know. Listen, I'm not going to... I've never wanted to be on this podcast just to be like, everything's terrible, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad, I hate this, this is bad. I've never wanted to do that. I'm not going to start doing it now. I genuinely don't think it has to be like this now. I think there's a chance they can pull themselves out from it, even if we don't win any other games. If we just lose them 1-0, I'll be happy. Oh, mind you, I do like some goals. And I do want Testrup to be like the league's top scorer. So even if just for her.
She's not going to be the league's top scorer, is
well,
she?
She's not going to be the league's top scorer. But, you know, if she could just like really cement her name in like, you know, like, I don't know, like break a club record or break, like just do, you know, just like.
I think she's already taken
the WSL record, like, I think. Yeah.
In terms of. Has she become the all-time leading WSL scorer, or at least in a season?
I think definitely in a season, possibly even of all time, because like we never really know.
We've had players play for us for a really long time that have scored
quite a few goals over years, but she surely is like the you know, in a season, she scored the most, surely. Anyway, I just want her to get some kind of like, you know, rack up some more goals. And anyway, it's not necessarily...
It's been great watching her. It's been such a great thing to watch Emily Testrup. I've really enjoyed it.
In that game, yeah, she was still really watchable, wasn't she?
She's brilliant.
I think we missed Napier.
Oh, yeah.
Actually,
Napier was on the bench.
She's been great. I've really enjoyed her. And we miss Lazelle. They've been right up there.
Both absolute ballers, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are. They've been like, they're right up there for my kind of players of the season. So I think if we get everyone back and we play something like a 4-4-2 with like midfielders next to other midfielders so that when the ball pops out, we can just scoop it up. Then, you know, it, like my next formation, like we just play everyone in midfield, like Rogers, Bull, just get Fernie on even if she can't run. Just stand her in the middle and run around her. You know what I mean? Just get a load of midfielders on and like don't lose the ball. Just, I don't know. Anyway, it's not over until it's over. All right.
Okay. Cool.
You heard it here first.
All right then. I've heard it here. You told me.
Yeah.
And
yeah. But I'm not sure I want to go to any more games.
Yep. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. What's next,
we'll
anyway?
What's
Tottenham.
Next? No, it's
Man United.
It's Man United away.
All right.
And we are not going to that because.
That's logistics, though, not a choice, isn't it?
If it was a 2 p.m. kickoff, I may well have gone, but the 12 p.m. kickoff and 6:30 start on a Sunday after I've been doing lots of other things. But we shall be back for the Tottenham game. I think we will be there, if nothing else, to see Em and Sarah.
Exactly. That'd be lovely.
Yeah. So you've been listening to the Bristol City Vixen Cast. We will catch you next time when
we go again.